League's Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning League's Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. League's Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
And joining me on the podcast right now and live on video, of course, for the new year 2023, Paul Hill. Paul, the question is, the big question is, will we drag ourselves out of this dreary market in 2023? Because it's now been close to 500 days since AIM all shares is all-time high, and we're still in a bear market. And they tend to last, you know, around 12 to 18 months, and we're sort of in that territory area now. So big question here, Paul. What's your thoughts for 2023? Take us through the quarters, if you could. But quarter by quarter, what do you reckon?
I'm not putting my head on the block here, am I, obviously?
No.
But anyway, I mean, I think if you take sort of, you know, big picture, where is the market sort of set up? And I think most people, if they've had a look at sort of where Wall Street are with the analysts and major, the big sort of investment banks, it's been a bear fest of sort of like predictions for this year. Very few of them are anticipating a sort of like a real stormer of a year. In fact, they're almost consensus, two really similar, as much, but all on the same side of the boat, that there's going to be a really tough first half and then a rebound in the second half. And I would like to say, well, yes, that might be in certain stocks. And the logic behind their case is such that you're going to get essentially a really tough recession in the first half. The employment's going to roll over, and companies are going to get defaults and stuff like that. And then we're going to get a Fed pivot in the second half. So an earnings recession in the first half, reset the bar. Then you in the second half, you're going to get sort of like that Fed pivot, and then we'll set up for next year in 2024. Now, my personal view is that I just think everybody's on the same side of the boat in terms of where they're going to be. And I would suspect, actually, you know, that isn't going to happen. In fact, I could actually see quite the opposite. I could see sort of like a fairly flattish sort of like first half. And then I could actually see a sort of reasonable second half, but I would predicate it that it's going to be a stock picker's market. It's a great environment, I think, to really sort of like look at, because what we've had over the last 18 months is that all boats largely have fallen with the tide as the Fed has sort of ramped up interest rates. And what that's meant, that it's been that we've talked about it a lot, the baby in the bathwater. And so coming back to your question, I want to split it into two halves, not the first half, second half, and not quarters. I'm actually going to split it into big cap, small cap. And I can actually see when you know, coming back to your sort of like, you know, your observation that we've had a bear market in all things small cap and AIM for 18 months. I actually think we've bottomed out, and we've got sort of valuations and the mean valuation of PE multiple sort of AIM round about sort of 10 to 12 times, and earnings are growing at that sort of like percentage as well. So PEG ratio around about 10. So it's really good value in there. But I would say on the other side of the coin, you actually got quite a bit of damage still to happen in the mega cap tech. And I've been doing a bit of digging, as you'd expect me to, because I'm a bit of a saddo over Christmas and stuff like that. I've been looking at sort of the mega cap sort of like, you know, giants, etc. And I still think that there's some way to go in terms of, you know, a downdraft on the S&P 500 with the likes of Apple and with Microsoft, because, you know, they trade on roughly, I'm just looking at my numbers, Apple's on about 20 times, and you've got Microsoft.
And Apple hit a 52-week low yesterday. And
I
know it takes a big, 6% of the S&P that takes up. So that's going to affect that indices as well. So, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, and I think it still needs to take a big bite out of its share price still to coin the pun. And why do I think that? Well, basically, it's on a 20 times PE ratio. Well, earnings are only growing really around about top high single digits. So it looks elevated in terms of a PEG ratio of over 2. And likewise with Microsoft, it isn't quite as expensive, but I can see that one coming down. And my fair value for both of them is around about 20 to 30% less than where they currently trade. And I'll put this on, you know, as a chart when we do the video and stuff. I'll chuck that on so people can have a look at it. And so when you run down that rule, you've still got your mega cap, your two biggest stocks, your sort of $2 trillion sort of dollar market cap sort of businesses, still got to come down. But then on the other side, you've actually got some really beaten down sectors. And it comes into my sort of like, you know, value territory. And you look at sort of like Alphabet or Google, and you look at Meta and Facebook, and Meta trades on about next year's earnings, 10 to 11 times earnings. And likewise with Alphabet, it takes about 13 times. And then obviously the giants in digital advertising, this is where you come to your call in terms of where the economy is going. Because if we're going through a hard recession, which I think what, you know, a lot of the economists are saying, then actually probably, even though there's really low multiples, this could be a value trap in the short term, simply because there's going to be a lot of corporates and companies who are just not going to advertise. They're just going to take that dial down, and that's going to hit those guys. But in the long term, if they do have secular growth, which these guys do, then they could be a decent recovery player. And I would say, I mean, I've run the fair values likewise, and I think there's 20% upside longer term, you know, over a 12-month view for Alphabet. And I think there's actually around about 50% potential upside for Meta if you know, once we get through this sort of like, you know, this tough sort of like advertising sort of like scenario. And they're not my preferred plays, but they are. It's what's quite the point is what I'm making. This is turning into a stock picker's market. And if you look away from the sort of like, you know, your Apples and your Microsoft, your real defensive, expensive type of stocks, I think that those will come down. If you look away from those, there's good value elsewhere.
Yeah. Well, do you know what? I think this is like, you know, this is why I've largely, you know, gone to cash a bit. So we talked about this last time. I mean, you know, you've got to be patient, I think. It's not going to happen, you know, in a few weeks or maybe even a couple of months. But there's a chance to upgrade, like you said before, your portfolio here. There's lots of good companies out there that have taken a knock, and they are very good, efficient companies. You know, I mean, we've done the UK house builders. You know, they'll get back. It may take a while, but they'll get back to their prime eventually. But yeah, it's a very good chance to pick up some stocks for long-term holders that are very successfully, you know, highly efficient, cash generative businesses paying dividends. And you know, you're holding on to these for 3-5 years, and you'll see a decent return, I think. So that's what I'm doing. I mean, I've been sitting here on the last, and I've had spare time the last few days, and I'm going through ideally how I want my portfolio to look. And I'm talking still a maximum amount of about 10 stocks, because you know, I think that's enough to be doing homework on. But I mean, you know, top three will be mega caps or big caps in the UK. I'll have another three sort of like growth stocks that are, you know, cash generative, but don't pay dividends, but they're growing very well. And then I'll still have three sort of micro cap space and that. But yeah, so, you know, I'm swaying more towards, you know, higher quality, more, you know, visible businesses, more predictable businesses, you know. So I think it's a good chance here. I mean, and I'm not saying, you know, get all in cash now, because we've largely seen the big fall, but we may have a few rallies. Who can tell? Well, we said, look, when everyone's on one side of the boat, the market tends to surprise people because all the sellers have sold, and even some buying liquidity pushes the market up. So you may see some aggressive, you know, bear market rallies where you can exit any positions you don't want to be in, and then just sit there for a while and just monitor the markets, you know. And I'm looking at a company like Persimmon. You know, and
okay. Have you pulled the trigger at all?
No, I haven't. Not as yet. Because technically, I mean, I've seen. Oddly, I've had a couple of alerts on charts. I said alerts on charts as well. I go through fundamentals, look at charts, and I had a alert on chart for Taylor Wimpey today, Barrett, and just basically their 50-day moving average crossing 100-day. That is not a long-term trend. They've done that before, so they could take a leg lower. And so I don't want to get in now and see them take a leg lower, because we don't. And we got to say though, you know, The market and the economy, you know, they don't run in sync, do they? And we've often seen when official recessions are announced, that's the bottom of the market, pretty much, you know. So it's a good base for form. But as yet, we haven't had an official announcement. Have we have a recession in the UK or anything yet? But
No. You raise a brilliant point. Yeah, I mean, they're not in sync, the economy and the stocks. And the stocks have had a fall of like a recession anyway. But but there's still probably worse to come in the economy. Now, I've got a bit of a Brucey bonus, actually, because myself and and John Heumann are going to have a real deep dive on all things house builders next week. So we'll publicise that probably the back end, and you can have a good look at it. But we'll be looking at the sort of multiples and the different, you know, sort of opportunities there, and not wanting to sort of like be accused of being off my rocker like you sort of stuff. Being on that other side of the boat that everybody's sort of leaning on is probably not a stupid thing. And I'm with you. I think sort of there's some good value in those house builders, no doubt about it. And I think, as I say, I think there's good value in, you know, long term in even things like Alphabet and Meta and stuff. Yeah. And my preferred sector, there's two, you know, I've been banging the table on going sort of like, you know, best in class technology, etc. And the two sort of real good sectors that I love are healthcare and software. Yeah. Now, healthcare actually has run up quite well just recently because it's another defensive expensive. So I haven't really found that much great value there at the moment. But I would say software, there is plenty. And what I like about software is that if you go for sort of like, you know, enterprise software that creates, gives companies productivity savings and is on secular tailwinds in terms of long-term growth, has got recurring revenue streams, then if there's a really hard economic, you know, dropout, then these guys will do well because of the, you know, the helping companies strip out cost. And if the economy does get better, they'll do well anyway. So you've actually got you've balanced your ship there on sort of software, but not all software stocks should be treated the same, because some of them are still really expensive on 10, 15 times sales, but others on the small cap on AIM, you can get them for 2 to 3 times sales on good profit margins as well.
Yeah. Do you know what? It's funny, because I've been looking a lot more to sort of larger cap stocks. Like I said, I want to have, you know, three sort of almost, you know, FTSE-sized company, FTSE 100-sized companies, and three sort of growing stocks between sort of, I suppose, you know, 100 million to a billion, something like that. But in there, actually, I've already got filled one slot with Argentex. So that's one in there in the mid sort of section. But I mean, you're still seeing, if microcaps come out with, you know, trading updates that are not meeting expectations, not above, they still get hammered, you know. And I've seen big drops happen of late, you know. And
well, one of those, let's just talk about one of those, because there was one over Christmas, wasn't it? Because we've talked about it, Harland and Wolff, in terms of, they've got that brilliant sort of like contract with the
1.6 billion pound contract. Yeah, so that's it in the background, which is quite nice, and it rallied up crazy on that.
Fabulous.
Yeah, exactly. It doesn't get better than that. And then all of a sudden, it was over Christmas, so I sort of did read it, but I noticed it wasn't welcomed. And if I go off, you know, off memory, wasn't sort of expecting revenues like 40-50% lower than actual expectations. So it then went up, you know, look at the chart there. So it's an amazing chart. It went from 6 pence up to 28 pence, and then it sort of, you know, sloped down to about 19 pence, then dropped down to about 15 pence, or even 12 pence. So it's very volatile in the last few months. But it's sitting in the background, though. You've got to, you know, I suppose you've got to have nerves of steel in the microcap space when you're in a bear market. Because you understand, sitting in the background is that £1.6 billion contract. It's not all for them, of course, consortium, but they'll get a decent slug of that. But, so I don't know. Did you read the update? It's like a rollercoaster ride of a share price, that one. You know, good news.
I was actually quite encouraged that they've expanded their facility, their debt facility, which says to me is that people are actually very willing to fund this because of the large contract that they have out in place and the forward order book, which is all covered. It's just a matter of timing before they deliver it. And as long as they've got the sort of cost sort of like, you know, bucket sorted out, then they'll make good money over time. And if it just happens that some of the orders have been, some of the actual delivery of it have been shifted from one period to the next, then frankly, who cares, in my view? It's all going to come down to execution, isn't it, really, at the end?
Yeah.
And if they can, and what's beautiful about those type of contracts, I would have thought, is that not only are you going to get the build revenues in terms of the sort of like, you know, ships and vessels and stuff like that from the MOD, but likewise you're going to get quite a lot of recurring revenue streams off the bat, because these are sort of like, you know, things which are going to be in the, you know, the MOD's portfolio of things for years and years and years. And if you can enhance that recurring revenue streams, that's where they make a lot of money in terms of the defence. So yeah, I mean, it was obviously a knock and a bit of a disappointment, but I'll just say, well, that's just par for the course, really, in these terms of large contracts. And when you're on a business that you know, has sort of like got that firm view going forward, then frankly, to a long-term investor, it doesn't make much difference. In fact, it probably creates a buying opportunity, actually.
Exactly. I was encouraged by that. They were saying a lot of it was down to, you know, delays, supply chains, all that stuff, and not cancellations, which is, and they say disappointing, but it's still in the pipeline. They're still confident in the pipeline.
Another one, actually. I've got a big congrats for you because you got Polarian Imaging, didn't you? They got their flipping FDA approval. So I looked at it and just thought, absolutely fabulous, because they really deserve it. I mean, they've been working so hard to finally seal that with the regulator, and the shares actually didn't go up that well.
On the day they went up about 50%, which I sort of expected them to do. But then that's you know, endemic in this market. There's, you know, people tend
to
sell.
Yeah, that was bonkers, isn't it? Because they come back to 53p actually.
Yeah, yeah, and people, and that's it in the bear market. It's like, you know, in a bear market, if this is a bull market, that'd probably be, you know, it'd stay up there and keep climbing at where it raised. But you know, people have taken such a big knock over the last 18 months, and they've seen their cash levels and portfolio values go down that they say, right, I'm taking some profit. So anyone takes any profit on anything that's break even, and that's what happens, and that flips in a bull market. Of course, people just pile into it and it keeps powering the thing. But you've got, you know, sellers matching buyers, and then most of the time sellers overcoming buyers, and so it's all about supply and demand of the shares, isn't it, at the end of the day? And so I've no doubt now that was the biggest hurdle for Polarian. Now comes the commercialization, because
what's the significance then of getting this in terms of the commercialization? Is it now
they're focusing on America first and foremost, the sort of the biggest centers out there, and but like I said, it's globally. I was reading the amount of there's about 55,000 MRI scanners, I think, in the world, and it's basically this is the value.
That's like singing to sort of like a, you know, musician. I just love those data points.
But I mean, I think in America is about it's about 10,000 America. But this is a value add to all MRI scanners, because this can portray, you know, give you images and in depth studies that nothing else can. There's no tech out there. That's why I've always loved it. And like I said, you've got the highest academic seats in the world looking at using their technology from, you know, Oxford University, and they've all the peer review papers on this. I think they've got over 100 peer reviewed papers now on their technology. So it was. I couldn't believe it when they couldn't get FDA approval. What's going on? So now it's there. I mean, the hard yards have been done. Now it's commercializing. So I don't know what's happening next. Maybe they'll announce some, you know, commercialization deals, whatever. But they did have plenty of cash there. But it's globally significant. Every MRI scanner in the world can be adapted to fit their technology. So it's adaptive. It doesn't replace anything. So I wouldn't be surprised to see some, you know, deals with big sort of MRI scanners, manufacturers and all that stuff coming out. But
particularly the ones which are located in those, is it pulmonary health? It's basically the lungs,
pulmonary health,
isn't it?
Yes, exactly.
It's the ones which are really utilized for that sort of area, isn't it? Which will be perfect, I'd have thought.
Now, there's no point looking at brokenness now, because the last one was out a long time back, and it was delayed and delayed and delayed. So I don't know what the guidance is now, but if you just think, just the potential. America spent, in this area, they spent $150 billion a year in this area, America. And they say it's an unmet medical need. Like I said, they can't even pick up COVID, after effects with current MRI scanners. You can, you know, with Polarian. That's just an example of how advanced it is compared to what's out there. So it is, like I say, you talk about best in class. This is a tech that's best in class. And I'm sure there's going to be, you know, a lot of demand for this around the world. So it's been interesting to see how it unfolds. But yeah, I mean, at the moment, it's a gift, I think, where people, the share price got up and come back down, because it's exactly the same price now pre-FDA approval. So
I know, it's nuts, isn't it? Crazy. I mean, it's a big pat on the back to the management team, and I mean, it's great for the patients. Let's be clear about it, because it'll improve the, you know, patient treatments and diagnosis. So
I've got to applaud it's private investors, because I haven't been on Twitter a lot recently, but I did see someone copy me, and also on the chat group I've got there, that people had already looked on the FDA website and seen it had passed, approved, before any RNS came out. Between the break, so they couldn't get an RNS out. But about two or three days before that happened, already investors had picked it up. So you have the power of the investing crowd there. It's very good. Yeah.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I mean, I think it came out, wasn't it, on the 23rd in the US after UK markets closed. Mm-hmm. And obviously then you had the 24th, which was essentially the Saturday. You had the Sunday, the bank holiday. You had the Boxing Day. And therefore, the earliest the company could... But you're right, absolutely. It was spot on by the... I mean, I saw it on Twitter as well, but only because of the private investors who picked it up. Now, another one we've talked about is HVivo, actually, which is the old Open Orphan. They came out with a really good sort of like... contract this morning as well for RSV with a sort of Asia Pacific business.
This is the first. Have you noticed? I mean, it's a very hot area as well. Everyone has got colds. Everyone's got RSV kind of problems.
I've
got
rid of mine now because I was scoffing and spluttering.
I know.
Well, I'm not feeling perfect, but
yeah, time. But that just shows how prevalent it is. And I don't know why. I mean, I've had a couple of people say actually that, you know, it's because we've masked up and locked ourselves indoors that we haven't been going about as normal, picking up small little bugs, which you wouldn't notice normally, and your immune system would do the job of sorting that out. But because we've been locked up, then we've been hit really hard by these. But this RSV, you know, 5.2 million. And if you just look down, you know, HVivo there, you know, non-stop contracts at this. I mean, and this is the first one in Asia Pacific, which is very good. And RSV, their challenge model, and you know, it's constant news flow. And they are, you know, I think even covered the Midas Touch column. Was it yesterday?
Yes, they did. Yeah, you're right. Yeah, yeah.
But what I like is when you look down a news feed sometimes, and you can just see, you know, contracts being announced. You know, and if you look at that, you know, 5.2 million. Today, if you go back to like even November, 17 million contract there, and it keeps going. So this 10.4 million in August, and it keeps going like that. And they're constantly very busy. And no doubt this company's heading in the right direction. And there's very sharp guys behind it. And I think John, actually, you mentioned John. I think John's talking to them on the podcast today. So
is he? Okay,
Mo
good.
Khan. Yeah, but I do like what they're doing.
I saw the sort of the revised broker notes, and yeah, I mean, they're now trading at a pretty good valuation. I think they're up about 5% today. So they're probably on around about sort of 14, 15 times PE for next year, but they've got a big chunk of cash. So if you actually back out that cash, and I think they've got sort of like net cash of sort of 19 mil. So you take that away from a market cap of 82. So you get to about 63 mil. And then you look at sort of like their EPS, which is backed out of cash, is probably around about 0.8. So essentially 62 divided by how many shares in issue? 600. Okay, so that's roughly around about... 671 million shares, 62 million.
We are witnessing the inner workings of Paul's brain.
I know,
speak live.
No, I know. I'm just trying to work it out. That's equivalent to roughly around about sort of like around about 12 times, actually, if you back out the cash. So that's really cheap, actually, for a business that's growing so well and winning lots of big contracts. So,
Well, and also, just if you look at it, and they always state this, it's worth noting. I mean, you know, they have contracts with four of the 10 largest global biopharma companies. So, you know, out of the big 10 biggest, you know, four of them are, and you know, they're still a microcap company. And so that validates really the work they're doing if those big companies are using them on a regular basis. So, I like them. And, you know, Cahill, the guy who sort of set them up, and he's come on the podcast quite a lot. But obviously they spun out Pullbeg as well, also very busy, and Cahill's over that. But two companies I think worth watching. They both got tons of cash, by the way, and that's one thing I think very important in this market. If if you're not operationally, you know, generating cash, how much cash they got is very important. So that's, I mean, first and foremost, that's exactly what I look at straight away. I'm looking at, you know,
here's one then for you.
Go on.
Here's one for you, which is a bit of a bigger cap, which is very controversial, actually. So I will throw it out there at the moment, but also topical because it came out with some delivery orders or delivery numbers yesterday. Tesla, it's got $21 billion of cash, and the shares have absolutely cratered, as you probably know, as everybody's been having a go at Elon Musk and Twitter, and likewise. In fact, actually, to be honest, because of the Q4 delivery orders yesterday, which were released, I think the market had already seen that. And I'm not sure some people were actually dealing in the shares ahead of the time. That would be a total conjecture. So I really haven't got any evidence or anything like that. But the shares did come off 10%, 10%, 10% in December and really came off hard. And they came out with some numbers and they fell again today. But if you look at through the lens now, they're trading at roughly, given the share price, they're trading roughly about 20 times PE. But they're growing sales at about 40%, and the earnings per share growth should be 30% plus for the next, you know, however, you know, number of years. And if you run through that, then I actually think we'll put the cash on it. There's actually some upside to that. I would put this onto, you know, sort of a stock watch list. If you're interested in all things EV, why not go for the granddaddy? The problem you have with Tesla, is this a car company? If it is, then essentially it should be on a much lower PE. Or is it a data stroke battery stroke, you know, autonomous driving type business and a sort of tech company? And if that's the case, it can justify a much higher multiple. But I think that's where there's going to be a lot of volatility still going forward. And it probably still has got somewhere to go. But I know it sounds crazy, and I'm a value investor and a GARP investor, but I would put Tesla on sort of a watch list as, you know, let's just see what happens here. Because, you know, it is an iconic brand. Yeah. And yes, competition is getting massively fiercer in terms of existing OEM car manufacturers and new ones, the likes of Rivian and NIO and all, and from the Chinese guys. And so it is getting far more competitive, but their margins are great. They're getting a lot of a tailwind from the Inflation Reduction Act out in the States, obviously from all that, you know, the carbon credits and the credits they can give to their buyers. And their margins are just a first class. I've not driven a Tesla, so I couldn't actually say about the reliability, but lots of people have owned them. And, you know, clearly some people like the product.
Yeah, yeah, no, I've heard people talking in favour of that. What I would say, I mean, regardless of the fundamental, I mean, I saw a guy on CNBC calling Elon Musk a liar because apparently Elon Musk kept saying, I'm not going to sell any more shares, and he's sold twice since he said that a couple of times.
True, true.
A lot of that was down to Twitter. So when he dumps stock, you know, you will have a knock-on effect because not only the amount of volume he's putting in the market, but also there's just sentiment-wise, people think he's taking the eye off the ball with Twitter and all that stuff. But what I would say is, you know, in that case scenario, just get a bit familiar with charts because it's in an aggressive downtrend.
Yeah,
and
I know.
Unless that starts to find a bottom there somewhere, then you'll be, you know, averaging down a lot because, unless it starts bumping. Because, say, look, I did point this out. In fact, my son owns about $50 worth of the stock. I was doing a regular podcast when we stopped for a little while. I said, no point doing it in the bear market a little bit. So, but he's obviously down on that. But I said, why Tesla? So I said, pick some companies in America or brands you're aware of. We went through a few. And so, in fact, one of them holds McDonald's, which has recently hit a 52-week high. Of course, cost of living crisis is not a problem there. People can still afford a McDonald's. But, the opposite, and he owns Tesla. And he said, well, they're electric vehicles. They are electric vehicles. So even you know, at that age, the brand is imprinted. It's amazing when you think of it. It's not that old as a brand, but even kids are very well aware of Tesla and them being sort of the best in EVs. So the brand is up there. But like you said, there's that valuation thing, and people, while they're deciding whether it's a sort of internet company or tech company or a car company, you've got that worry over that. And when the share price is going down, you'll find people saying, well, it's the car company. When the share price starts going up, it's tech company. So I would just wait until it bottoms out. I mean, if you want to own it, because it's still in a very aggressive trend. Like, if you go back $400 a share in November 2021, and now it's down to 108. And we have seen a very sharp fall off in the last few days. So,
I think that's wise words, you know, in terms of that's where the technicals are so strong that it ain't worth trying to catch a falling knife on this one.
That's right.
But there will be going a time when the valuation is looking extremely good. I mean, I'd point out it's around about fair value. Another one for your stock watch list, which I've got on mine, is, and this is the mega cap boys, is PayPal, because that's come off so badly. And, you know, in terms of fintech, I've done pretty well out of Equals and Argentex and stuff. Well, yeah, this is obviously the granddaddy on the consumer side through its Venmo as well, its mobile payments platform. And that's come down hard. It started to bounce a bit, and it's sort of bottomed out. It's trading on around about 16 times PE, but it's growing its EPS at roughly around about 15 times. So its PEG ratio is about one. And I say, I think it's around about fair value, sort of $70-$80 per share, etc. So if this one came down, if it was a baby in the bathwater stuff, and the market strategists were right and we're going to see a big dive, then I would put it into the same sort of bucket. This is a good quality, world-class brand with a sound balance sheet, generating secular tailwinds with pretty big sort of defensive sort of economic, you know, moat, etc. behind it, because obviously it's got that networking effect. Then you can go a lot worse than the likes of Tesla and on PayPal on a big down. And so keep these real big stocks, these quality stocks that are just leaders in their industry and will stay leaders forever, into not ever, but a long time. And just keep them on your watch list. And then when they hit a valuation multiple that you're happy with, then, you know, pick some up, or, you know, that sort of stuff, because you're unlikely to lose in the long, long, long term, as long as you sort of take that type of horizon, rather than trying to sort of like just knock the ball out of the park on micro and small caps, on just those.
Yeah. Well, do you know what? These are the companies my kids own. Fred and Monty, right?
Are they own PayPal? They don't own
PayPal. Here's a list of American stocks they own, okay? And tell me which ones you think have performed the best. So McDonald's, Microsoft, Disney, Google, Amazon, Costco, Berkshire Hathaway, Philip Morris, Apple, and Tesla. Now, yeah, those, there are four that done quite. They haven't really sold off that much. And
I'd say Berkshire, Philip Morris, and Costco.
McDonald's and Costco, yeah. So those,
that was a
four,
good guess.
Yeah. So if you own those load of stocks there, you wouldn't be. I mean, if you equally, you know, exposure to all the.
Interesting that they're going for Philip Morris.
Well, it's funny. My younger son, he said, "Yeah, he said that." He said, "Who does vaping?" I said, "I don't know if anyone does." I said, "Philip Morris must have some kind of exposure to that." He said, "All the kids are doing that." But you realise, you know, in a downturn, people tend to smoke, or even smoke more if they're worrying. So it's one of those things they'd never give up. So the revenues don't go down, you know. So, but even if you look at some of those companies, like, you know, Amazon, you know, how much they've come down. It's odd if you look at this and you plot against the Fed's balance sheet, against these companies. They were now at 2019 levels. So they started to wind up the money machine and really started printing it after COVID happened. And all stocks pretty much in the S&P turbocharged upwards. And now we're back pre that. We are now back to pre-money printing craziness. And of course, people, that's the elephant in the room, isn't it? Quantitative tightening. You know, people are not seeing that it's the opposite of what happened in the last 5-10 years. So it's hard to see. Listen, the only thing that'll stop that, of course, is the Fed saying, okay, the jobs market is taking a hit. Let's calm down, or let's stop, and let's stop, you know, quantitative tightening. So yeah, there's lots of things going against the markets at the moment. I think just have a bit of patience a little bit, you know, because in the end, the Fed, if it's a difference between, you know, prices and people losing their livelihoods, you know, that's a lot more political, isn't it? People losing their livelihoods.
Yeah, but they do have a dual mandate, don't they? Yeah, they have not only inflation, but they also have growth, which is good. And one thing, just adding on to what, you know, the observation you made there, there's some quite good anecdotal information in terms of inflation. We've obviously, you know, talked a lot ad nauseum about goods and natural gas prices and stuff like that, LNG. You know, if you look at the over in Holland, they've cut the rollover really hard. So that's all great. Everybody knows about that. And obviously there's lagging effect of the housing and shelter. We've seen that coming through with rental values at the coal face starting to roll over. Well, actually, also, which came out in December, which I hadn't seen, was the Indeed recruitment salary growth rates, and they've started to roll over as well over the last sort of three or four months. So they're still elevated. They're still about 6%, but they've come down from 9%. And these are on advertised salaries. And so consequently, what you're seeing now is also that's the last sort of like, you know, part of the jigsaw that needs to fall into place. Salaries starting to sort of like, you know, soften off and getting back to that sort of 2% level. And by the end of the year, that will definitely have happened, probably much, much quicker because they started to reduce. So I think coming back to your, you know, coming full circle to what the, you know, the Fed is going to do, it's pretty certain. I'll be stunned if they, I think the market's absolutely spot on that they're going to roll over, even though the Fed is saying they're not, because the economy is going to weaken. But then it comes back to your great observation. The stock market is seeing this. The analysts are predicting a really tough economic. It's already priced this in. So actually, when you look at it through that lens, when you come to say, what will the stock market do, then actually I can't see it marrying the economy, or I can actually see it, if anything, because everybody's on the wrong side of the boat, actually, doing reasonable, being reasonably resilient.
Yeah. Well, the thing is, what's next? Okay, recession. We know that. What's after that? And then that's what the market looks at. It can only sort of improve. I mean, how long will the recession be? Yeah, but it may last for a while. But, after that, you tend to get, good businesses getting better, like I say, because the weak competitor's been taken out and the good, efficient ones take a bigger market share. In fact, you know what's very odd? I'm surprised at natural gas futures. I mean, they're down now,
Yeah, they're about 70. They were set last time I saw about 75 compared to over 300 at the peak in the Dutch natural gas.
Yeah, they're down at almost pre-Russia invasion, Ukraine invasion, I should say. So
and the oil prices.
Yeah. So that'll feed through into inflation figures. Any other stocks you talk about?
No, I would sort of say, just looking at it's going to be a busy month with trading updates for year end. And as I mentioned, just on my sort of portfolio, there's Eagles will be coming out with something, hopefully, in the next couple of weeks. You've got Argentex in about week three or week four. You've got good quality, you've got really excellent quality businesses as well in places like Avingtraz, which will be the back end of in January, because, I mean, that's all things nuclear and, that's something to look forward to. You might even see some good numbers from Kate Box. I know it's their Q3, but I wouldn't be surprised if they've had a pretty good Christmas, because people have been celebrating.
Yeah, exactly.
So we'll wait and see. And then likewise, we've got the other ones from sort of Lords Group Trading, the building merchants, and I think they've done pretty well. Venture Life as well, and that's all coming down to execution and delivery in terms of where they set themselves up. You've got the you've got portable oxygen concentrator guys at Bellascura as well. And what's really interesting about those guys, and this is worth noting on Bellascura, is that because China's reopened, they've got an absolute influx, as we all know, we've heard about in their hospitals, of people who need respiratory, help, etc. Portable oxygen concentrators are fabulous because they allow people to be treat themselves at home outside the hospital if they need oxygen support, which we know people do with this condition. So if they can actually get their deliveries in sync with the requirements in China, and remember, they've got a third-party contractor, a massive one in China. If they can get that volume coming out, this could be a real big upside. I mean, I haven't spoken to the company, so I really don't know. But I just think this pandemic isn't going to go away that quickly in China. And if they can say they can get some decent numbers together, that could be a real sort of liftoff for them. I don't know. Yeah. Anyway, we'll wait and see. But it does seem as though it's upside, if nothing else.
Yeah. It's odd. I'm literally at the moment a little bit obsessed with, recovery plays of good businesses that have taken a hit, And I'm just looking around and there's lots of places that are lots of companies that are starting to sort of rally a bit that you shouldn't. And that, to me, is symptomatic of us not being that far from the bottom. And things like, I was looking recently, Victoria Plumbing, for example, and even STS Sofas are rallying a little bit. There's On the Beach starting the rally, and I think I was thinking, I saw a lot of adverts for On the Beach. I don't own any On the Beach, but I saw a lot of adverts for On the Beach and talking about free lounge, sort of airport lounges,
access,
and all that. And that caught my eye, and I thought they got plenty of cash. They got no debt. They got about $65 million in cash, and they've had a hard time the last few years, but they haven't got any debt. That's a good thing, and they've got a lot of cash, and they just they are operationally profitable. But things like that, thinking, okay, what are people going to be doing more of in the next couple of years? And looking at this weather we had, Leslie, I'm dying for a holiday. I'm sure people are booking holidays. And I saw a report on the BBC saying holiday bookings are up. And I'm thinking, it is like that, isn't it? It's like the gym. The gyms are always full in January. Same as booking holidays. When you have 3 weeks of constant rain, you think, I want to see some sun somewhere. So good quality companies in these areas, recovery areas, we know have been hammered, but they're going to recover. It's worth looking at, I think, going forward. If you look, if your time horizon is, you know, I'm talking about 3 to 5 years, you know, pretty much. But I mean, I'm not saying a bit before that. But yeah, recovery.
Okay,
plays,
so I'm gonna in that case, I'm gonna put a big picture sort of like prediction for 2023. Mm. Small caps in the UK are going to be up 10% plus in this next 12 months. Okay, but I think large caps will be flat. So meaning small caps are really going to underperform, and they're going to come out of this faster in terms of upside. So,
do you know what? I've been thinking about that recently. I was thinking about getting into a house builder even today because it's starting to rally, and I thought, is this the bottom? I thought, hang on a second, what's going to happen here? Is they are going to maybe have technical rallies because they've been sold by 50%. But then it came out with trading updates, which probably be a little bit worse, or maybe a lot worse, I don't know, we don't know that yet, than the last 6 months or last year, 12 months, because there are people cancelling because mortgages were being pulled everywhere. So we know the figures are not going to get worse. And they say they are, some of them are down by sort of, it's on bookings, about 30%, something like that. So it's, you know, it's worth waiting because you don't know how the market will take the actual results when they come out, because we know they're not really good. But how will the market react to those results? You know,
so it's the outlook that will react. I think they're baked in pretty tough last quarter. Yeah. But if you want to know, then tune in to myself and John next week, because we're going to do a deep dive in all things house builder on evaluation and which ones we like.
I'll check that out. Marvellous stuff. Cheers up all. Speak in a couple of weeks.
Take care.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
Leagues Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning Leagues Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting 3 matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. Leagues Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.